We'll call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Education to order. It's March 21st, and it's about 3 minutes after eight. With us this morning, Representative Porter, myself, Bundy, Stevens, and guests. At least one, maybe two of our members are taking a look at the Northern Edge exercise. I understand we probably will be joined by Senator Lehman and perhaps Senator Green a little later. We're served this morning with Lana's secretary, Lola and Karen from my office, and Gavel Gavel people are giving us a hand, are Casey and Emily, and Lori on teleconference. Lori, you were telling me about how to access teleconference earlier, and I think that would be valuable for the public.
It's complicated.
Some people will do anything not to speak on camera. Joining us are Representative Jewell. Let me say this. If you're interested in folks that are doing gavel-gavel or anybody in the offices, if you want to listen to the dialogue of any of the meetings that are on teleconference, apparently you can access them via your computer. So if you just don't want to look at the transcript, you want to get a nuance of the voice, and someone not only says no, but hell no, you can access them via your computer and ask her, because it's complicated. All right. Today, we are once again addressing HB 94, the pupil competency tests. We're gathering, perhaps trying to set a precedent here. We're gathering information before we make up our minds rather than in the other fashion, as sometimes happens. And we have an opportunity today to hear from some people who are where the rubber meets the road, some teachers of the year, as a matter of fact. And on the other side of the wheel, where the rubber meets the road, from people from business and industry that employ our graduates. So we're really looking forward to gathering that information. If you have cell phones and pagers, if you haven't turned them off, you can give them to Karen, and she will turn them off with a hammer. And, of course, as always, for the secretary, if you would just identify yourself and who you're with, who you're representing, so that we can keep our records straight. Meetings being teleconferenced today, listen only, Valdez and Anchorage, and our first participant will be via teleconference, where he's giving up part of his spring break to be with us, and we're certainly thanking for that. I also want to thank Vernon and Rich from NEA Alaska for facilitating the teachers to be able to join us. We really appreciate that opportunity. So with that, I would like to begin with Mr. Walker, Dan Walker. He was a 1999 Teacher of the Year. He teaches 7th grade in Kenai, and he is on his spring break and will be joining us off net via teleconference. And Mr. Walker, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. If you'd like to go ahead with your comments, please, we're looking forward to hearing from you.
Okay, I'll do that. My name is Dan Walker. For 18 years, both at the elementary school, the middle school, and the high school. I spent most of that time teaching at the middle school. I've been involved in development and implementation of state content standards for the last 5 or 6 years. I worked on writing performance standards for geography. I worked with the math reading and writing standards, both in the classroom and in writing district curriculum, and in assessment programs through state through the Department of Education. I see the standards as a good guideline for teachers and curriculum committees, both for guiding instruction and developing curriculum. I see the standards as a mission plan for the schools. With our always constraints of time, energy, and money in the schools, this gives the schools a clear list of what we should be doing and trying to accomplish in each area of instruction. At the same time, the broad scope of the standards provide room for individual schools and districts to develop foci of current emphasis and subject matter. Not knowing how familiar everyone is, the standards have two important parts. You have the content standards, which identify the skills and knowledge that students are supposed to have, what we want them to gain. And then there are the performance standards that are actually have performance in them that hopefully describe activities that students can do to demonstrate their level of competency in those areas. It's very important to remember that the gap is, what I see as the biggest concern, the gap that exists between the ideal of the standards and the high stakes assessment of the high school qualifying exam and the benchmark test. We've given a great deal of attention in writing standards and developing the tests, and now we need to focus our attention on filling that gap in between, which is filled through instruction. We have to remember that these are content standards and they don't address modes, levels, or philosophies of instruction. There's a great misconception that the standards are a recipe for success. But in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. The standards are not a recipe at all. They are more like a menu, a list of what we want our students to know and be able to do. And as any of you have known who've been disappointed in a meal you've ordered at a restaurant, you know that the menu is not always the whole story. The recipe for successful students is best practices, which is a list of skills of teaching and techniques and approaches that we have been proven to be effective in the delivery of instruction. And you put those best practices in the hands of qualified teachers, and that's how we get the outcomes that we want, successful students who can not only pass the test that we put in front of them, but also have successful independent lives. The standards are written as broad statements of accomplishment that students should be able to do, but they are not the Ten Commandments, and we have to always be thinking of them as being under construction. So we need to periodically review these and see if they do state what the people of Alaska want our students to learn, and if the performance standards are written in a way that teachers and schools can use them to develop teaching. One thing I've learned in working with performance standards is that you can't just hand them out to teachers in the classroom, that there has to be comprehensive training and there has to be commitment. But few of our teachers in Alaska today are ready to truly implement standards-based education. Another thing that ties into that is I have a real strong concern that the performance standards in the last 2 years have been overshadowed by the high school qualifying exam, and that for some people in some districts that the test may become the curriculum, which is a dangerous precedent. Tied into this is the fact that we have some standards that are not tested, many standards that are not tested, and we run the risk of those that aren't tested being minimalized and being shunted into the side, and I don't think that is the intent of this legislation. We also have to realize that we do have students in our schools who may not be capable, even in the hands of the best teachers, of meeting every standard. We also will have some students who may be capable of meeting the standards, but may not be possible of passing the high school qualifying exam or the benchmark test. And good teachers all know that we always use multiple assessments. We never just take one snapshot of a child and measure their ability from that. The other thing that is really critical we have to look at the standards is the fact that when we introduced the standards and we introduced the high school qualifying exam, we introduced a new component into our institution or our teaching in Alaska. And right now those are kind of floating free and not tied in with the other elements that we have. As part of that institution, I think we need to consider that. When I use the standards in the classroom, working with the students, as you said, when the rubber meets the road, the education of my students is based on the standards. The standards define what activities I design for my students, and any activity that I do design should be directly connected to the content standards and justified by good teaching practice, those two things coming together. Teaching to the standard has no value if I don't teach in a way that has sound pedagogy behind it, grounded in what we know about learning. Teachers in Alaska schools need the support and encouragement to follow good teaching practices and not be drawn into a blind alley by those of us who would have us think that the high school qualifying exam is a curriculum and all we need to do is drill and practice on those elements in order to have success with students. We create special learning programs in our school for are at risk, and that's part of addressing the needs for meeting the standards. We teach our students to understand the idea of the standard, what does the standard mean, and how does it relate to how they're taught and what they're doing in school. We do things like set high expectations for students and challenge them. We collect samples of student work and portfolios so that other teachers can assess students as we pass them on to other teachers or other grade levels. And we also give them practice in performing tasks that are performance tasks defined and described in the performance standards. This is all part of good teaching to the standards. Another part of what I'm doing is sharing my understanding of the standards with other teachers in my school and my district. Because right now in Alaska, there's a small handful of us that have a pretty good handle on what the standards are and how they relate to instruction. That is a pretty small group of people. And then finally, as part of continuing to be a good teacher, I'm trying to increase my understanding of the brain, of the learning process, because that's all part of how we make students able to succeed in life and meet the standards, is learning how people learn and having a better understanding of what's behind the learning process that we try to work with. You also asked us to address something about the future. And what would it be like 4 years from now? Well, I would hope that 4 years from now I would be mentoring new teachers and guiding them into techniques of instruction that would use the standards to focus instruction and sound teaching skills to structure learning. I would hope that in 4 years I would have time to plan so that I plan with my fellow teachers, because planning with other teachers is the way you can best address the individual needs of students and to plan engaging curriculum. It's kind of interesting that the critics of our current education system often hold us up against the Japanese and the Singapore education systems, both of which have spent a great part of their day planning instruction, not actually working with students. This is proof over and over again that good planning is tied to good teaching. In the future, we will be seeing more individual learning plans where we're specifically addressing the individual needs of students, because we have more and more students that are staying in school instead of dropping out as they were 20 or 30 years ago. Helping those students succeed just becomes more and more of our challenging duty. 4 years from now, I would hope that the high school qualifying exam will be redesigned to reflect the minimum competencies that we expect students to have and measure their true essential skills of literacy. We can look at the future in a pessimistic or an optimistic light. And I might be struggling with large classes with many unsuccessful students without the resources to help them. Or I could be participating in ongoing staff development programs that support professional growth for teachers. I could be working with other teachers who have been trained in standards-based education and we're familiar with the essential skills required of our students. I could be working with administrators that thoroughly understand the challenges and nuances of standards-based instruction. 4 years from now, I hope that teachers and students have access to a resource room in every school where students in need of help can get extra reading, writing, or math instruction. And these would exist year to year, not funded by shotgun approaches that where you have that program for a year and then your funding runs out and disappears. 4 years from now, I would like to be able to reassure struggling students that the high school qualifying exam was something that was within their grasp and not beyond their reach. 4 years from now, I hope that I'd be working with a grading and assessment system that is tied in with the standards and that reflects students' ability to meet performance standards and their grades, their high school credits, their high school diploma would all have a validity that's all integrated and not different programs that they have to pass through. On the pessimistic side, I could be sitting where I am today 4 years from now. And that would be better informed than most of my people that I work with about standards and their relationship with our curriculum, working without sufficient planning time with other teachers, without sufficient support to meet the needs of my students, and unable to reconcile how a student can pass their high school classes and fail the high school qualifying exam. In conclusion, I would just try to identify some things I think are really important that we focus on over the next few years in order to make that, fill that gap that I identified. Number one, I think we have to look at our performance standards and say which of these standards are essential, are the ones that we say no kid should be able to exit high school unless they have these skills. And we need to look through that list of performance standards and say which of these are essential. And that's what should be tested in the high school qualifying exam. We should also take those same essential skills and relate them to the classes that are taught in the high school. So that if I'm giving credit for high school English, that high school English class should be directly connected to the performance standards for high school English, and the student's grade in that class should be directly connected to their success in those performance standards. All these things need to be connected together. And this needs to be tied in with an ongoing revision and update of the standards. I think we need to, the second item we need to focus on is the recruit, training, and retaining quality teachers and principals. And we're going to do that by having ongoing staff developments that trains the teachers in the things they need to be able to do in order to have good, solid, standards-based education. I think one thing way to address this is to have master teachers in each school who work as mentors in the school, leading instruction, mentoring young teachers, and supporting mature teachers in their task of teaching. Because the modern principal who traditionally had that job, they don't have time to do that. Their job is just too big right now for them to lead instruction and to be a mentor of learning. We also need to make sure that there's a positive work environment in the schools, because right now we're competing with almost every state in the union for every good teacher that's out there. That means good salaries and benefits, that means participation in decision making, and that means a place to work where you feel welcomed and important, and where you are held to a higher standard just like you're holding your students to a high standard, so that you're not teaching beside a teacher who you're dragging by the collar. Finally, there needs to be a connection in this recruitment, training, and retention of quality teachers between the state, the Department of Education, between the school districts and the schools, and our university system. Sometimes these two groups, all in the same business, don't talk very much, and I don't feel like we're working together toward preparing teachers and therefore preparing students. And my third item is we need to have support for school-based programs for unsuccessful students. Because even the best of us have students that we can't give all the help they need to be successful. We need resource rooms where students who are not on track to meet standards for identified through benchmark tests get extra classes in reading, writing, and math. We need to have tutor programs available for them and for their parents. And we need to have support for teachers in helping them learn how to work with those kids. I think that if we work through these three key areas of addressing the needs of students, addressing our need for good quality teachers, and making sure that our educational program of assessment and measurement is balanced, we're going to get a lot closer to the goals that we all have in common. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions for Mr. Walker? Representative Stevens and then Jewell. Recognizing that we got three other teachers we want to hear from.
Right, trying to make it fast. Mr. Walker, I really appreciate hearing your comments on the need to train teachers in the standards-based type of instruction. Can you give us a little more insight into what is what that actually requires, how long it would take? Can we expect to do that in a couple of years to have a majority of our students, of our teachers, well-trained in the standards-based instruction? What exactly does that take, and when would this occur?
Well, that's a big question, because there are a couple ways to look at the issue. You can use standards as merely a way of defining what your curriculum is going to be. And in that sense, teaching to the standards is not that different. Here's your curriculum. You can teach like you did 10 years ago. This is what you need to do. The other model of true standards-based education says you use these performance standards not only to instruct what students are learning, but also to evaluate whether or not they're successful. So that means that if I'm addressing a standard, which I do because I teach language arts, that a student identifies and corrects misspelled words, then not only do I have to teach that student spelling, but it's expected that I construct activities whereby a student identifies and corrects misspelled words and use that as a way of not only seeing if they know it, but also assigning that student grade and assigning that student advancement to another level. Standards-based instruction basically means very much like you would see in a vocational program. If you can do this, you get recognized and signed off that you can do this. If you can't do this, then we go back and teach it to you. I think that intensive programs for teachers should be school-based. I think that you need to take a couple of years in a school where you have expertise within the school, where you have commitment within the school to say, okay, we're going to work on addressing the need for standards-based education in our school. We're going to construct our teaching so it's designed that way. I think you need some time before the school year starts for teacher training, class, you know, in-class type training, and then ongoing throughout the year, someone working with those teachers, meeting periodically once a week, once a month, giving them support as they go through a transition. You also have some kind of framework that has to be constructed, which most districts don't have either, for supporting that kind of record keeping and documentation, which is very different from what most districts now have for grade keeping and credit giving and that sort of thing.
Brief follow-up. We really have a full day today,
okay.
So
he asked the question that I was going to ask.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Walker, and enjoy your spring break. We once again congratulate you on your recognition as a Teacher of the Year, and we appreciate you spending some time with us this morning.
Well, thank you, and if I can be of further help, you know where to find me.
Okay, thank you. Well, we'll wait till you get back to Anchorage or Alaska.
Well, that's what I mean.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'd like to move now to Sonia Schmidt, who's the 1998 Teacher of the Year. She teaches, nope, that's right. She's having an airplane connection. She's still coming in on Elastic Airlines. That would bring us to Marilyn Rosen, though, who's the 2000 Teacher of the Year. She teaches fifth grade in Dillingham. And Marilyn, if you haven't seen it yet, as you go through the halls, we have some of Dillingham's children's artwork up there.
Check it out.
Okay, well, you can go home and tell them that that didn't go to a black hole when they sent it to Juno, that we actually displayed our artwork.
Okay, thank you. I guess I'll just...
And as you begin, may I ask, in your comments, would you tell us how the high school qualifying exam, the competency test, has impacted your students this year?
I'll try.
Thank you.
I'm Marilyn Rosine, and I teach fifth grade mostly in Dillingham and have been there since 1982, which puts me on the old codger list for our district. I wrote a response that each of you has, but I changed it. So that's part of what I do is I write and rewrite, and I would be glad for any questions, and I'll hurry up and be shorter. It's difficult to follow Dan. He's extremely well-versed in the standards, and I don't feel like I am. I wrote responses to the questions that you posed, and first and foremost, I'm a teacher. And I would like to believe that I had standards before the state asked me to have performance standards and content standards before the state asked for those. But I agree that it's a good idea to bring these closer together for the students and for fellow staff members, because standards are a measuring tool. And I would like to believe that if I'm measuring 2x4s, an inch is an inch is an inch, and I can measure, and if I measure and cut my board, it's going to work. But children aren't 2x4s, and they don't come measured in inches. And I have no control about what they are when they come to me. And even in the preschool, we have many special needs preschool children in our schools, and in Dillingham we have quite a few. And I believe that public education, this is in your paper, is like a funnel. And we have over 20 years that I've been in education, I think we've gotten wider at the top. We are accepting more and more children into our schools, and I don't disagree with that, but that increases our responsibilities. And I believe that the funnel is getting smaller and smaller in the bottom. And it doesn't mean that most won't get there, but they sure won't get there at the same time. And they sure won't get there without bumping over each other and over themselves a little bit. And some are not going to make it through this funnel. And I think maybe we need to have a few more of those. I'm proud that I don't work with predictable widgets. I work with Dustin and Caleb and Mahai and Ethan, and each one of these kids is in my class and is a survivor. I believe that public education can provide different opportunities for all of these children. One student I don't work with, his name is Noah, and he's 4 years old. And 2 years ago, when he was in the special needs preschool program, his teacher came to me and said that Noah had had some baby food through his mouth for the first time in his life. He'd been with a feeding tube prior to that. And now he still comes to our special needs preschool. And I cried, and she cried. And his mother is one of our very talented teachers in our district. And this is part of the wide funnel. We've got lots and lots of children who need extra help in our districts. And I'm also worried about a friend of mine in Anchorage, Matt, who is now a former high school student. He's 16. And he's out of state right now dealing with some chemical dependency problems as well as academic problems. And I was thinking, I wondered if benchmarks would have helped him, because he didn't have benchmarks tests when he was in sixth grade. And I think they would have, because I think they would have been another flag for his teachers and for his parents and for his community. Even though he was receiving special education services, there was no way to really monitor other expectations that we would have other than he's just going down the road. And I think I teach fifth grade, and so my children right now, the students I have this year have no benchmark experience at all. Last year, they were fourth graders and they didn't have a benchmark, and they were because the third grade is the benchmark. So part of my job is to prepare them for a benchmark, and one of the concerns that I have about a district like Dillingham is we don't have a system down like the Kenai district does. They're much bigger, much more stable in many, many ways than my district. And I think that there are lots of ways that a district can do a better job of that. But in rural Alaska, it's a difficult job to teach in rural Alaska and to stay there. And you were talking with Dan about having like a two-year program to train. Well, that's if your people are there 2 years from now. And that's not always the case. This is the time of year when the buzz of who's coming back next year, who's going to job fair, who's not going to job fair, who's got a contract, who's signing it, who's not, who's leaving, who's staying, who can afford to leave, who can afford to stay. If Lee moves, who teaches Spanish? If Bob and Megan go, then who's going to replace them? And if Lee goes, then... And that's exactly what's happening in school district offices all over the state, especially in rural Alaska. And I've also had an opportunity to, along with that, to attend job fairs in Anchorage and in Fairbanks, actually 8 out of the last 9 years. And I've seen a lot of people come in, and not as many as there used to be. And I believe that this is a big state concern, and I've talked with the State Department as well as teacher placement. And we can't keep and train our people if we don't get people. And when I spoke with the state school board last June, we talked about recruiting and retaining teachers and the realization that we can't train as many in the state of Alaska as we need. We just can't. So we're always in the business of importing teachers, and that's very important. Can we remediate teachers and students? I think we can. I know that I am looking forward to having more training on how to be a better performance-based teacher in my classroom, and I believe that accountability is very important, and I believe I have high standards for my students as well as for myself, and that bothers some people. Especially, I know that it has bothered some administrators in the past because they think that some of us work too hard, and we do work hard. I work very hard, and I expect others to work hard as well. I wanted to go on to talking about the high school qualifying exam, and I've spoken with kids in my class as fifth graders. They're getting a picture of it, of what this looks like, because they're community members and they hear cousins or brothers and sisters talking about it. But I don't think that they're worried about it, and I think part of that is because we talk about, we want to find out what you need to know and how we can best help you learn those facts and performances as well. And one of the performance standards in my classroom is we have a school store, so I brought these pencils. These are Home of the Wolverine pencils that we sell. And I believe that that's a really important performance standard for my class. And I had a young woman who was working with me a few years ago, and she went through the standards and talked about the pencil place and figured out, no, they probably won't shut you down because you meet a lot of these standards. But I hadn't aligned it. And aligning the curriculum to the standards is very important. And again, it's a time factor. For my district, it's having the same staff who can actually align, having alignment be more than matching numbers and words, which is what we did last year. We matched numbers and words of our curriculum for math to the standards, and I still feel that we are behind. We need standards 101 about every year, and Dillingham is not as fluid of a district as many districts are, and I just encourage you to keep that in mind, that when districts are small, people wear many, many hats, and they have to do more than one job. And so we're working there, but we're not there yet. And a dream for me would be in 4 years to be able to go into Jennifer, a new teacher's classroom, a former student, by the way, and say, you go watch Janie Heal teach. I'll take care of your kids. Or you watch me teach this math lesson. Or I'll watch you, and then we'll talk about it. But having teachers who are experienced and are willing to work with new teachers, having them be in not really an advisory position, but like a teacher leader or a mentor or teacher on assignment is what some states are calling that, where I would be, or someone else would be employed as a teacher but not have a classroom responsibility, because it's hard to fit some of that in. And a good mentor program is important. I'd like to entertain any questions if anybody has any.
Okay, thank you very much. Did I understand correctly that the fifth graders, you're looking at the high school qualifying as diagnostic, apparently clear back in the fifth grade, and they're not running scared?
They're not running scared, but they also haven't had a benchmark to see what that looks like. Now, we did, several of our staff members are working on a grant and on a class to make, at least for the math benchmark, to make some practice tests to just the format. I mean, when we, and I didn't give the CAT test this year. Our district decided to not spend the money, so I have no assessment for my students this year. But when we were using the CAT test, that's multiple choice, then I don't teach multiple choice, so I would go through training with my kids on this is the best way to take this kind of an assessment. This isn't, life isn't a multiple choice test, but there are parts of life that are in terms of testing, so you need to know this. But they're concerned about it. They're concerned about it.
That's probably a wise way to go. Questions for Merrill?
Oh, one thing I forgot
yes.
to mention.
Go ahead, please.
I don't think I mentioned, but I think I may have put it in my paper. I've worked with 7 principals, not counting last fall when we didn't have one until January, and 6 superintendents. So there's a little turnover in the leadership department as well.
I'm sure that doesn't have any relationship to you being there.
Well, they're not here right now, so.
Representative Stevens, did you have a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when you as a teacher of the year, Sonia, say that you're not...
I'm Marilyn.
I'm sorry, Marilyn. So when you say you're not quite ready to teach to these standards, it makes you question, you know, wonder... where your colleagues are and mm-hmm. how much work they need to put in to get to this to the point where they're comfortable with it. How do we practically do that? When do you do this standards 101? And how does it happen in a district? And how do you deal with the fact that, as you say, you have such a turnover in teachers? When will this occur?
Good question. Through the chair, I believe that is a concern, and I think some of that is happening in the training of new teachers. And again, that dialogue between higher education, and I'm hopeful that as students come in, they're much more aware. As I've worked with several student teachers who've come in, and more recently, yeah, we know about standards. That wasn't the case in my day. However, I think we're looking at extended school years. I think we're looking at concentrated times of in-service both after the school year and before the school year. I think that it's going to take people who are going to be in the system or in the school district for a while to help mentor each other through the year. It's not just going to be a few days in August and a few days in June that's going to happen, where that's going to happen. But I feel the way, what I do know about standards and performance assessments, I know from what I've looked at and when I've talked with other people, and I've had some wonderful opportunities to meet with people who are implementing what they call a standards-based classroom. I don't know if I do or not. Come and look and see. I mean, I'd like to think that I am, but if there's a checkoff list somewhere to see if I really am on our Alaska list, I don't know where it is.
Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much time do you currently get in a year on training on these standards?
Okay. In service.
In service. Yeah. Okay. Through the chair. We have about 10 days that are dedicated on our school calendar for in-service, and that's the gamut. That's looking at curriculum, looking at math, behavior. There are some mandated in-services that the state requires for staff. We're looking at about 10 days, and they're not all together.
Mr. Chairman, one more follow-up. Mm-hmm. And is this varied from district to district, or is it pretty uniform?
The 10 days or what we do?
The in-service.
The number of days, I think, is pretty typical, but what we do is different. And, I mean, right now, that's one of the things that our district is looking at. But we have to figure out who's going to be here first. But next Friday, I have a meeting that talks about what are we going to do for in-service next year, and maybe we could look a year beyond that, too.
Chugach School District, they spend 20 days of the summer.
Yes.
In addition to the normal in-service, and that's a pretty huge commitment. But their standards are working, and maybe that's the kind of investment we need. Well, thank you so much, Marilyn, and once again, our congratulations for your recognition, and certainly our thanks for all that you do. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And I have a pencil for each of you.
Okay. We will keep that. That would bring us to Patricia Truman, who's the 2001 Teacher of the Year. She's an 8th grade language arts teacher in the Mat Valley. And Patricia, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Patricia Truman. I teach in the Mat-Su School District, and I represent students. And my students affectionately call me the Trumanator. I'm going to begin this morning. I have a lot of pages, and I'm going to read, but I'll stop here and there and probably expound. So I'm going to do this quickly. I have a lot of things to say. I want to begin this morning just with a few biographical and philosophical remarks, just to put myself in context with the whole standards movement and Alaska in general. I have lived and taught in Alaska for 23 years. In 1978, I moved to Fort Yukon, where I taught primary. I taught there for 2 years, and then I moved to Fairbanks, where I worked as a reading specialist and a gifted, talented teacher. I taught there for 5 years, and in 1985, I moved to the Mat-Su, and I have been there ever since. And in the Mat-Su, I have worn many hats as a gifted, talented teacher, as a reading specialist, and currently I teach middle school language arts at Palmer Junior Middle School. Palmer Junior Middle School is a school of 750 students, and I do believe that we are representative of the unique diversity of Alaska. I'm also a National Board Certified Teacher in Language Arts, and I have a master's degree in English from Bredlow School of English. In reference to Dan Walker's allusion to Japan, I had the opportunity to travel to Japan on a Fulbright to work with Japanese teachers and compare our systems of education, which was interesting and enlightening. I also sit on the Board of Professional Teaching Practices Commission, so I also see that side of education as well. And I highlight these accomplishments not to boast, but just to give you an overview of my career and as one of the broad experience and global diversity. And throughout my teacher, as Marilyn mentioned, I've worked very hard. All teachers I know work very hard. And I expect the best and beyond from myself. I expect the best and beyond from my students. Their success is our teachers' accomplishments. Teachers don't work for recognition or fame or fortune, obviously, but they work for our future, and our future are our children. As a National Board Certified Teacher, I definitely understand the meaning and implication of standards, as well as the process of demonstrating competency in meeting those standards. I believe that performance standards are important for students. Performance standards are important for schools, administrators, and teachers. I know that Alaska's performance standards were developed by educators, and they match standards of many other states. I believe that standards are essential, but I do not believe that they are sufficient to encompass everything that students need to learn in school. The math, reading, and writing performance standards clearly speak to the following. They define expectations. They drive the realignment of curriculum. They provide a framework for assessment and instruction. They provide evidence for educational delivery and reform. And they also provide evidence for intervention and elaboration. And when I use the term intervention, it's what most people use, remediation. Currently, there is much panic discussion about the math standards. And although I am not a math teacher, I integrate math standards into the language arts curriculum. And I am familiar enough with them to suggest that rethinking and regrouping is necessary. And that process should include educators, parents, students, and community members as they struggle with the answers to two basic questions. What do students really need to know, and when do they really need to know it? In reference to the when question, it might make more sense to move the sixth grade benchmark to fifth grade. Presently, sixth grade students are asked to demonstrate proficiency relative to fifth grade standards in all three areas. What this means is that students then only have 1.5 years, which is seventh and part of eighth grade, to thoroughly prepare for the eighth grade benchmark. Additionally, access to test data at the end of the fifth grade would provide clear evidence for the kinds of instructional strategies necessary at middle school, thus ensuring a smoother, more defined transition. The reading standards clearly articulate definite transitions as students progress from learning to read through reading to learn. Students are asked to demonstrate basic proficiency in comprehension, summarization, analysis, evaluation, which are all an application of the higher order thinking skills. Reading standards provide students the tools needed to function as informed, literate, and creative thinkers. In the 16th century, Francis Bacon wrote, "Reading maketh a full man, conference a ready man, and writing an exact man." Accordingly, writing standards provide the framework for effective, exact communication. Students absolutely should be able to demonstrate proficiency in the art of paragraph writing and skill in the writing for a variety of audiences, business, employment, observations, letters, essays, inquiry, research, just to name a few. I believe that the math, reading, and writing standards clearly define essentially what students should know and be able to do, and to ask students to demonstrate proficiency is fair and right. In the Massive School District, we are working to ensure program delivery includes standards, assessment, and instruction. This process involves realignment of curricula to reflect standards-based assessment-driven delivery, a metaphorical weeding and watering. As I see it, the dilemma for teachers is not in standards-based instruction. And this is my response to the ubiquitous outcry, "If you haven't been teaching standards for all these years, what have you been doing?" Teachers have been teaching to standards since time began, but assessment has been different. Assessing performance standards precludes performance assessment. It's the assessments that drive the instruction, ultimately ensuring learning proficiency. At the same same time, while students may be meeting standards through instruction, they are not necessarily guaranteed proficiency simply because they are not practiced in performance assessment. Both teachers and students need to get up to speed. If folks don't know about assessment, it's impossible to begin to talk about intervention and elaboration. In my classroom, and in some pockets across the district and the state, I am integrating curriculum more thoroughly and comprehensively. When thinking about intervention and elaboration, I don't think more, I think different. My students have been through 8 years of school. If they don't have the skills, they don't need more of the same. If they do have the skills, they don't need more of the same. Integrating the curriculum, and that the integration has to include humanities, which is art and history, and science, and math, and technology, and employability, and assets. All those, integrating the curriculum creates an environment of discovery and making connections and provides that authentic experience. My most compelling fear about standards-based instruction and assessment is that intervention will limit student participation in the science and arts. Alaska is geographically rich and culturally diverse. Why not create informational landscapes for students as beautiful and exciting and full of wonder as our state through the arts and sciences? That's where students discover the wonder, and the learning begins, and the learning changes, and the learning continues. Other happenings in my classroom and across the state and across the district are community-based and parent and more parent-involved activities. An example of a community-based activity that begins in my classroom is a weekly radio show that my students do. They write the copy, and they talk about our school, and they talk about their issues, and they talk about our community. That's authentic assessment. Those authentic experiences, to provide those students with authentic experiences to validate the importance and the usefulness of their learning. And in addition, all teachers should work with students on test-taking strategies, the how of the assessments. Finally, across the buildings and districts and state, professional conversations and development are taking place as we strive to improve student assessment instruction through data-driven instructional audits. How do we know our programs are successful? I have been personally involved with this process as a quality school consultant and have worked with districts throughout the state as well as in my own building with teachers and working on standards-based instruction and assessment. Looking ahead for 4 years from now, I would expect that my classroom will actually look much the same, except that I expect to be more practiced and more intentional with gathering and using data. I expect that this will be the case across classrooms and districts and across the state. At the district level, I expect we'll have developed a variety of measures to check students' progress towards state as well as district standards. In addition, the district will have well-developed early intervention strategies to ensure all students' success in demonstrating proficiency in meeting standards. Having said this, however, I must point out the following. 15 years ago, PTR, pupil-teacher ratio, at Palmer Junior Middle School was 15 to 1. Class sizes were optimal. Today, because of cutbacks due to budget cuts, the average number of students in my classes has doubled. This is unacceptable. Think about what is being asked of me as well as other teachers across the state. Quality instruction, quality writing instruction, speaking from the point of view as a language arts teacher. It's humanly impossible to assess 120 essays a week and to provide individual feedback. Yet the bar continues to be raised. And what are the ramifications? During my tenure at the MATSU, I have enjoyed the company of 5 different principals and 7 different superintendents. I might also mention that our textbooks, which there are not enough for every student, are 12 years old because there's no money to buy new ones. Perhaps literature is timeless, but textbooks are not. Think about what you're asking, and think about to what length you're willing to support the response. I had a professor once tell me, "Don't worry so much about the answers, just enjoy the questions." And I thought that was pretty funny because he wasn't the one that was looking for the grade. But I have some questions for you to enjoy. And I can give you a copy of these if you like. How do benchmarks / the high school qualifying exam correlate with the California Achievement Test? They're different kinds of tests. One's performance, one's norm referenced. And what are the implications? In what ways do parent-teacher ratio and student attendance influence success? What's the level of parental involvement? What about the community? Instructional materials, are they adequate? Are they current? Do they meet the standards? Does professional development reflect community and educational needs at the grassroots level? Are drive-by-in services a thing of the past? Does instructional delivery embrace integrated curricula? What about higher ed? Are they on the same page? Teacher training, pre-service, continuing ed, do these services reflect standards-based assessment instruction? And teacher quality, administrator quality. How many teachers are seeking national board certification, a process that is representative of the ultimate in professional development? Are teachers, and by the same token, are teachers who have earned National Board certification being rewarded and are recognized as experts in the field? Administrator quality, school quality. Do assessments take into account individual differences? And what about intervention and elaboration? What about the kids who passed the first time? And the final question. The question that is being struggled with as we speak is to delay or not to delay. And might I just suggest, and in my naivety as a teacher where my home is four walls, is that if we allow for individual differences in the classroom, why not allow for individual differences for the districts across the state and let the districts decide through writing an educational reform plan, taking a look at what's happening in their district, and let them decide when it's appropriate 2004, 2006 for their students for the high school qualifying exam to begin to count. What would happen then? Thank you.
We'd see a lot of 2006.
Probably.
Questions for Patricia? Don't you have one of those in your class?
I do.
Representative Steve, he's an ex-professor. Will you have to cut him a little slack?
Well, Patricia, it sounds like you're not entirely satisfied with the exit exam, the content. I'd like to have you comment on that. It seems to me as well that a civilization should expect its children to know something about the arts and humanities and history as well, and we're just working in these three areas, and also the question about that was brought up earlier by Daniel. He mentioned that which performance standards should be on the test. Some should and some should not. And could you sort of comment on the content of the test?
Okay, in so much as far as I know, my dissatisfaction is not so much with the exam itself, but with the limitations of the exam. And what I mean by that is that I would hate to see kids who have not passed at 10th grade be tracked or funneled into just merely an intervention track where they would not have the experience of the arts and the sciences. And I would strongly suggest that performance standards be taught primarily through integrated curriculum and through the arts and the sciences. That's my suggestion.
You did have an interesting comment that transition from learning to read to reading to learn, and so maybe there are some building blocks here that
have
to be done, or you can appreciate all the art in the world, but if you can't read.
Exactly. But it can be done through the arts, and by arts I mean, I don't mean making things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you, and again, our congratulations for your well-deserved award. Pleased that you are a Terminator. that the Valley can produce more than one kind of Terminator.
And we can do cabbages too.
and may I ask that all of the teachers, if that you take the opportunity to speak to as many legislators as possible, particularly HESS members, and if you'd like to coordinate with Karen, she could try to help make appointments for you, and certainly have an opportunity to chat with, share your wisdom with everyone, but particularly HESS members, I think on both houses would be really valuable. Representative Jewell.
No, that's okay. I was fumbling badly.
Yeah, well, right. And again, our thanks and our for giving up a day. I know that you have twice as much work when you get back now, so we really appreciate that, what you've done for us.
Thank you very much.
That would then take us to the next opportunity to glean information from those who are at the receiving end of the majority of our students and folks that are in the business community. And with our thanks for them giving up some of their time to be with us, I'd like to call on Dave Reese, who is the immediate past president of the ABEC, and if you could give us a little more information about that. Did you want to do this as a threesome? Come on up. And incidentally, regarding the math test comment, Dr. Johnson's here, and I believe we'll have a few minutes at the end of the meeting to give some comments of where they are as far as revising that. And to be gentle with our secretary, if you're going to intersperse your comments, please identify yourself before you speak. But David, are you going to begin?
I'll start, yes.
Okay.
Karen Bundy and panel, thanks for inviting us here today. And we did appear here today as a delegation, if you will, from the Alaska Business Education Compact. All three of us are members of the board of directors for ABEC. You'll hear from me very briefly as in an introduction. You'll hear from Tom Hamill sitting next to me here, who is the executive director for the School to Work programs for Chugach School District. And by the way, that school district was just awarded this year the a new American High School award for performance and quality. It's the first one, not only in the state but in the United States, to receive that award. So I think Tom will have some very interesting comments relative to his experiences. Sitting next to Tom is John Hart, who is the director of professional and continuing education at UAA. And I think we represent sort of, if you will, the breadth of the organization. I work with BP Alaska. I have been involved with the Business Education Compact from its inception. And actually, it goes back a little bit further than the BEC started in 1998. Some of us, about four or five of us on the board, were members of the original Alaska's Youth Ready for Work group, and some of you may remember in 1989, that group of employers representing about 70 employers who met with a number of educators across the state represented about 60% of Alaska's employment, and began looking then at what kinds of skills, behaviors, and attitudes need to be developed within the school system. That was even back before some of the school to work and the SCAN skills reports and some of the other things came out. Our real focus has been over the years and on into the inception of the Business Education Compact on employability of our students. From an employer's perspective, of course, that's what we're looking for, is how can we get the transition of students into the world of work. I like the comment that was made a little earlier by one of the teachers that really talked about needing to have standards, and the standards were very much like vocational education performance standards. Well, frankly, isn't that what we're trying to do for all of our children, is to get them into some kind of a vocation eventually? So I kind of have a bias of looking at education as leading towards some kind of vocation. So if that's a good principle to follow, then it certainly is one that we want to underscore. We will talk today to you pretty much along the outline that we sent to you, and I think you have a copy of that in front of you. It's just a talking paper, and we'll try to hit the points as we go through. Our purpose in being here, I think, is one, to respond to Representative Bundy and Senator Mulder, who were at the at a conference on the Baldrige system, particularly as it applied to the Chugach School District as they were developing. And we talked about the issues that the legislature is facing with respect to incentivizing or providing some support for schools that are developing a high-quality education system. So the purpose of our being here is essentially to respond to your question about what can business industry, what can this business education compact do to assist in this case. I guess what we'd like to do is just kind of go through this fairly quickly, but please, we did give you just a talking paper. If you have some questions, I guess Chairman's consent, we'd answer questions anytime during the session. So
if I might interrupt for a question now, because Mr. Cronenberg, head of NEA, is responsible for the high school qualifying test, because he invited me to a conference once where we sat down with business leaders, and they expressed their incredible frustration that their standards weren't very high, but our high school graduates weren't able to meet those. The classic person who can't make change or write a cogent paragraph, that sort of thing. And I guess I'd be really interested to know what your standards are. What are your expectations of someone who leaves high school? What's the bottom line here? What's the minimum? Because we've had that mentioned here earlier. We want these tests to be minimum competencies. We'd love every child to go way beyond that, but we want the test to be absolute minimum competency. And so in your conversation with us this morning, if you could address that from a business point of view, I would really appreciate it.
You bet. I think maybe I'd like to wait until you've gone through some of the rest of the presentation and can come back to that. But there are some, I think, very, very definite minimums, if you will, that we would look at. Okay. I'd like to turn it over to Tom, if I may.
Tom Hamill. Thanks for having us here today. I'm going to speak to the education piece, and I hope you have a copy of that in front of you. Excellence in education. Since inception, the ABEC has researched, evaluated, awarded, and promoted best practices in education that are found throughout our great state, many which were referenced already today. From our efforts, we have discovered a strong correlation between the presence of the following system components, which when found in an aligned system, optimize results, and most importantly, improve student achievement. And I'm going to speak a little bit about shared visionary leadership. And we're finding that it's somewhat inconsistent, and I guess the average stay of a superintendent in the state is about 18 months. District leadership provides direction, resources, staff development, and professional development opportunities, removes barriers, promotes best practices, aligns and coordinates all processes and components to ensure an effective, efficient system and staff that are accountable for results in student achievement. And I'm going to go into a bullet mode now. Performance-based quality standards and measures. Strong foundation and basic skills integrated and applied at higher levels. And I liked the comment earlier, the reading to learn and then learning to read and then reading to learn. I think that's appropriate. Clear, high developmental expectations and standards for all students. Continuous, authentic assessment and evaluation. Progression through performance and accountability for all for performance. An integrated curriculum. Including thematic units, critical thinking, problem solving, and projects. Application of learning through simulations, contextual experiences, work-based learning opportunities, and including the employability and SCAN skills. There needs to be a character education piece. There needs to be transition planning and practice. There needs to be regular goal setting and continuous improvement throughout the operation. And all coming to fruition with a meaningful diploma. The results, a graduate prepared to pass the exit exam and apply their learning, an individual fully prepared and qualified to transition into the next phase of training or employment, live and learn independently, and be a contributing member of society. Also, all students, all the individual needs of students need to be met. Learning-centered education, which develops the full potential of all students and promotes active and applied learning. Within that category, lessons and units are made relevant and meaningful to all learners. There are individual learning plans for each student. There are individual career plans for each student. And student learning profiles in which we find out which way each student learns best and make them fully aware of those practices through what are their learning styles, what is their emotional intelligence, and what is their volitional or values. We have to involve all aspects of our communities, our stakeholders, if you will, and everybody needs to be accountable for the system and the results of the system. Formulate community learning partnerships. They have to have input into the curriculum, and they have to reinforce regularly the learning and values of the system. And the prescriptive prevention, and this is to ensure that there is little negative or aberrant behavior, is accomplished through engaging students in building strong assets, building strong community connections, resiliency skills, and fostering relationships with significant adults. Under the staffing piece, obviously the staff has to be philosophically aligned, participate regularly in staff development and professional development, and as you've spoke to, Chugach has 30 days during the course of the year of staff development in service. Teachers are professional learning facilitators and responsible for the success of each student and compensated accordingly, and they are competent, compassionate staff of lifelong learners. We firmly believe that the aforementioned components in an aligned education system that is valued by all stakeholders will provide the best opportunity for all youth to experience success. And as we are establishing these clear standards of expectations for our students, we also need to establish clear standards of excellence for our districts. And Mr. John Hart, to my right, Director of PACE, will speak to that, a model of adoption and implementation of education criteria for performance excellence.
Before I go on there, could I ask you to define for the committee, you mentioned an individual learning plan.
Yes.
I think most of us know what an IEP is,
right.
But your learning plan is something different, and could you just amplify a little on that?
Sure. Each of our students has a regular, ongoing individual learning plan. In our classrooms, we spend our mornings on the basic skills, and in the afternoon in the thematic unit area, applying those skills. And if there are areas where they're maybe not meeting the standards at the time, they will actually create an individual learning plan related to performance tasks as to how they are going to accomplish proficiency in those levels. So it's an ongoing, working, living document that once they reach their proficiency, the document then will change. They'll come up with their next learning plan. It's a goal-setting tool.
And I was impressed with the notion that, at least in your school district, the children are very thoroughly tested to find out if they're visual learners, auditory learners, or some combination of tactile, visual, auditory, and their individual learning plan then presents lessons in their primary learning mode. I guess why I was so impressed is it was so logical that it's amazing that that wasn't going on. And probably many teachers do that on an instinctual level, but at least you bring it up to a more formal level.
Right. And that's our student learning profile. And we share that with them, and they start to understand what is their best modality to receive information and give information
so,
back.
So if a young person is having trouble understanding verbal instruction, they at least know that, yeah, they maybe have to see it in writing before it gets through. And Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did I understand you say that there was some ingredient of career planning or goal setting also?
That's correct. We have I actually run the Anchorage House program, which is a residential program in Anchorage where we fly our students in and actually from around the state to go through application of those character traits and employability skills and actually go out and practice those in the workplace setting.
So it wouldn't be necessarily funneling into one track, but just the skills necessary to...
Right, those are the basic transferable skills, and then we do start to individualize it as we progress through that. Small successes and individualize it as much as we can as we go.
How to apply for a job, how to fill out a an application, how to create a resume.
Right, and then actually going into the workplace to practice those communication skills and how do you clarify and paraphrase in front of a prospective employer and things along those lines.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why the Business Education Compact has been aligned with them.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to identify you for the secretary. Go ahead, Dave.
The Business Education Compact has been very closely aligned with the Chugach School District, even from the early days in developing the process. And part of that value for them is our ability to line up employers to get the involvement of the business and industry with the students. Sometimes that's the missing ingredient. I mean, we're trying to do that on a statewide basis, but this is just one of the models that works pretty well.
And they've, Tom Hamill, they've continually evaluated our system through evaluating our students as well as our curriculum, and helped us get us to where we are today.
Representative Jewell had a question.
Yes, thank you. How long has Chugach gone through this evolution to where you're really enjoying some of the fruits of your efforts?
Through the chair, this is the fifth year that I've run the Anchor House program, and the fifth year with the Chugach School District, and they began the process about a year before I got there.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
6 years. Are
you able to do all of this with how we currently fund education with state money, or do you have to go out and get grants to do this?
Yes, we actually bring in about a 60% additional funding, which is about $1.2 million in our situation from outside, outside of the general fund, the L1 fund, to accomplish this.
Thank you.
And that would take us to John.
I'm John Hart. I work for University of Alaska Anchorage. I'm director of the Professional Continuing Education Office. Most of the work I do is professional development for teachers. To give you an idea of the size of our program, this year we'll run almost 8,000 students, most of them teachers, through professional development courses. The teachers use these courses to develop professional skills for recertification and for line increases in the salary scale for the most part. I hope that I'm as articulate as I am passionate about my belief in organizational development and ways to improve systems. Most school districts, and Tom suggested that I would talk about the districts, we have the standards for students. In some real ways, we hold students accountable for the results of their experiences that they have at the hands of the districts for quite a while. So we have to be careful that we don't have a disconnect there. The students are certainly responsible ultimately for their own learning and their own lives, but we cannot underestimate the impact that the systems they go in, K through 12, will dramatically impact the results that the students see in their own learning. Most schools and districts are accredited by some sort of association or another, either the State Department or in Alaska, the Northwest Association of Schools and Colleges. In accreditation, it merely says that the organization is not so broken that it can't function. It has met minimum standards. It does not say that the organization is excellent. And without these are fine associations. They're made up of wonderful people, but they're still looking for minimums. Other districts in other states in around the United States have sought to go beyond minimum standards, and they've looked for other assessments. And two that many of them use are the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award criteria and the ISO standards for that are primarily used by manufacturing businesses. And you've each got a copy of the 2001 Baldrige criteria for performance excellence in education. The history of the Malcolm Baldrige Award, back when we were coming out of the price controls that were imposed back during the days of the Nixon White House, a group of people got together and they said, well, Japan is eating our lunch economically, but we do have some excellent organizations here in the United States and in Japan. And they went out and they talked to these excellent organizations, the most successful businesses in the world, and they said, what do you do? What makes you successful? And they did comprehensive studies of all these businesses. They took the data back and synthesized it. And the behind the Baldrige Award and the criteria is the assumption that if excellent companies have these common practices, if we can somehow elaborate these practices, which are elaborated here, and other companies or organizations can use them, and follow those practices, they will, by definition, then improve their operations. And that's proven to be true. The Malcolm Baldrige award-winning companies are about four times more profitable than their competitors, and their stock performance is similar. So one of the things that some investors like to do is if they have an inside tip on who's going to win the award, they can invest in that stock because they know it's going to go up. ISO is a little bit different program that companies use that want to do business in international markets, and it's similar to the Baldrige's in its assessment of quality practices. But let me talk a little bit. And some schools are actually registered ISO 9000. In fact, a couple of years ago, the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce adopted that as their educational goal, to register all students, to have all students in the state of New Jersey registered to ISO standards. ISO looks like this, and this is the 1996. I'm on an international committee that's been revising these for 1999, but it's not published yet. We think we're pretty close to a final draft, but it takes a long time. Characteristics of these high-performance organizations. They have a set of core values. Baldrige will list 11 core values that the organization holds dear. So everything they do is grounded in core values. It's guided by a vision of what the world could be if they were successful in accomplishing their mission. Now, basically, Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award criteria is an assessment, an organizational assessment instrument. It looks at the organization itself, and it assesses that organization in seven major areas. It looks at leadership, strategic planning, student, and for the education criteria, student, stakeholder, and market focus, information and analysis, faculty and staff focus, and process management. And it's looking at their approach to these things. It's looking at the deployment for these things. And then on a Baldrige assessment itself, these are all pointed. And those things add up to 650 points. And they put 450 points into results. So for an organization to score well on a Malcolm Baldrige criteria assessment, 45% of that assessment is on results. It's proven quite powerful. There are districts in this country that have had tremendous success with this kind of an assessment instrument. One that comes to mind is Brazosport Independent School District in Texas, a district about the size of the Mat-Su School District, 15,000 students, a couple of high schools, and middle schools and elementary schools, and it's a very diverse area ethnically and economically. And 10 years ago, they had on the Texas exit exam, they had about 20% of their minority students passing that exam, about 70% of the Anglo students passing that exam. Today, they're well over 95% pass rate on every group, and the stakes in Texas have been accelerated every year through using Baldrige principles. They actually applied for the Malcolm Baldrige Award and received a site visit, which is it's a rare to get a site visit. A site visit means you've got a pretty good application. They're one of two schools in the whole country that have ever received a site visit for the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award. Every school district that another one is Pinellas County Schools in Clearwater, Florida. Pinellas County Schools has two elementary schools that have actually won a state quality award. These are both Title I schools with 40% mobility rates, and every year these two elementary schools fight for the highest performance on benchmark exams in the state of Florida. They're using the Baldrige criteria to assess school performance and improve school performance. There's a school that we heard about on the National Education Goals panel last teleconference they had, Inner City Baltimore, Maryland, elementary school, set the state standard for math scores. This school is 98% minority, almost over 90% low-income students. And it sets the state, beat every other elementary school in the state, and it's through practicing quality principles. Now, a lot of this work comes out of the work that Edward Deming did. And what Deming says is the people are great, change the system. If you don't have the performance you want, it's not the people, it's the system. And I work with the finest people in the world in the educational system in this state of Alaska. I would rather work with them than any place else. And given the right system, we could have as fine a system as we want. One way that some states are being successful, now the Baldrige Award, it is not designed for everybody to apply. Nationally, this year there might be 20 companies and schools and organizations apply for the award. But there are literally thousands and thousands of them using the criteria to improve. Now in 1990, originally we had in the Baldrige Award, you had one criteria for performance excellence. And that covered all organizations. This is still the model used in Japan. It's the model they use in Hong Kong and Singapore. One criteria. In 95, there was some thought that, well, this works great for businesses. Maybe it could work for schools. They began piloting criteria for schools. And in 1999, I believe, was the first year they actually published a criteria for schools. Substantially, it's the same. There's minor differences in the weights, et cetera. And also in that year, they came out with criteria for healthcare. Now, because the national award went so well, a lot of the states felt like, gee, if we're getting all these companies using this criteria and we just got an award as an incentive and a recognition tool, maybe we should have a state award because high-performance companies in our state aren't bad for us economically. So right now, 42 states have state quality awards. And in Florida, Indiana, and some other states, they are now aligning the school assessment system with the state quality award system. In Florida, it's the Governor Sterling Award. And some states have one criteria for all different organizations. Some, and I'm a certified examiner for the state of Texas, for the state quality award in Texas, and Texas has always used a single criteria. Next year, they'll go to three, because it makes it easier for school districts to use and apply it, and plus there are slight differences in the mission. With that, I'm going to turn it back over to Dave Reese and let him summarize.
Well, if I might, just a question before we go and get to Dave. There are school districts in Alaska now using the Baldrige system?
I believe there are two. I'm aware of two. One would be Chugach, the other one would be Mat-Su.
Okay. This is available to all school districts?
Oh, yeah. These are free. There's a place to order them on the back.
And it's working very well in some cases, apparently. Are you aware of why more people wouldn't want to be moving adopt this, the Baldrige system?
I think you've heard some of the reasons why. I mean, first of all, it requires you to change the way you think. And the C word will cripple almost any new initiative. I mean, it's because we have people in a system now that are being rewarded by the system, and how can you argue that it's not a good system? If you look at schools, every one of us went through a school system, not much different than the Alaska school system today, and it has rewarded us. Every one of our teachers out there went through a similar system. And to go in there and say this system needs to be changed sort of flies in the face of all the successes they've had all their life, I believe. And that's one of the challenges. It takes time. And I think if you folks have heard from every single person that teachers don't have time to plan and organize and work together on how to change the system. I think that's probably the strongest impediment, and time is usually related to money because we pay people for their time. So that's one of the challenges that we face. It's also different terminology. There's a lot of resistance to say, well, it's all business and we're different. That's one of the things that we sort of disagree with, I believe, on the Business Education Compact. No, we're not. We have things we can learn from each other.
Has this been adopted by any state, for the entire state?
North Carolina arguably leads the nation in terms of an aligned system at the state. It works absolutely best in theory, certainly, and we're trying to see in practice if you have the legislature and the governor and the State Department and the school districts, central office, school boards, central office team, principals, teachers, and students all together on the same page. That is where it's most powerful, when everybody is working to the same ends. You go around this country, almost every school district will tell you they've got three goals. They want high student achievement, they want safe schools, and they want efficient operations. And it's pretty easy to go into any school district and find exceptions to that. And one of the things you do in an aligned system is you get rid of those exceptions. I won't say any more right now.
and let me offer apologies for Representative Porter. As the Speaker, the Governor occasionally seeks his ear, and he has gone to a meeting with the Governor, and he's told me he'd much rather have been here as far as a learning experience. Representative Jewell, you had a question?
Thank you. Yeah, I've got a couple questions for Tom, if I might.
Sure.
If we're going bounce back. I'm just wondering, in the Chugach School District, are you able to keep your turnover rate down? And as part of the grants that you receive, are you able to pay the teachers differently?
Merit pay
or somehow?
Great questions through the chair, Tom Hamill. We have been fortunate over the time period that I've been there. We have kept our turnover down compared to the state rates, and part of that I would attribute to our leadership and that they ensure at the job fairs that the folks that they even want to speak with or receive paperwork from are philosophically aligned, because we've been doing this for a while and we're a little different than some of the other districts in the state. So I think through that weeding out process, they've been able to hire staff that are aligned with what we're doing and understand what it's going to take, and it's very intensive, time intensive, to do the things that we do for the individual needs of all students, and that's worked well. We're actually facing through pregnancies quite a bit of turnover this year. People are going to leave the remote sites to be on the road system to be able to be near care. The second part of your question, or the second question, a good majority of the soft money that we receive, actually at my entire career at the Chugach School District, has been on soft money, as has my staff. And we do have a performance pay system in place, and I honestly couldn't speak to if that is soft money or O-1 funds that actually contributes to that.
You had a wrap-up, did you, Dave?
Thanks, Chairman Bundy. Dave Reese, I guess about two or three points to make, and that is that the Business Education Compact has a primary role of trying to help connect education and business folks, but also to connect education systems across the state with models, with things that are working. And that's one of the reasons why we're very closely aligned. It's why, as John said, we may not all have exactly the same direction. We're not here necessarily to tout cloning Chugach School District. What we're saying is, though, that if you want to see changes in the educational systems, then there has got to be some changes in the systems that will accommodate the quality approaches that John spoke to. We're, again, not selling Baldrige. It's a good concept. It's been used in many places. But the whole aspect of looking at the elements of the Baldrige criteria or the ISO criteria have been the things that have been effective in business, have been the things that are effective in many school districts. And if those kinds of concepts are both developed within the systems and rewarded in the systems, then I think we're going to see the kinds of changes that will get us to kids meeting the standards that we set at the end of their curriculum. I think you asked a question earlier, Representative Bundy, about what are the expectations of the business community. I could counter that by saying we haven't yet met the expectations that we stated as business and industry in 1989 with the Alaska Youth Ready for Work. And one of the reasons that we haven't yet met those is, yes, we're very interested in the skills, in the in the literacy areas, we're interested in the skills in the math areas. We want to be sure that students can apply those skills. And that's one of the things that we don't see yet is a real focus on application. But the other side of it is, as we've alluded to, and several of your teachers have alluded to, we've got to look at the employability skills. You can have some very top candidates coming out of schools with solid academic skills and the inability to work with others, the inability to be at work. A lot of the behaviors and attitudes that get changed by systems like the Chugach School District, like the Mat-Su School District, and I think like some of the others that you heard this morning. Those are some of the things that I think that can really help us in terms of finding students graduating from our schools who can move quickly into the workforce.
Well, we certainly want students that are functionally literate, but to use a phrase that some folks in Representative Jewell's area use, we also don't want students who are dumb smart, that are have a lot of answers but not very many questions. And I would ask the three of you, the term in your testimony, meaningful diploma, was mentioned. And if you could elaborate somewhat on what's your view of a meaningful diploma.
I could speak to it.
I'll give you all a chance.
Okay. Dave Reese, I'll respond to that from the employer perspective. One of the things we don't know now when an application comes in for a job is really what does that high school diploma mean? Because it can come from any place in the state, it can come from out of state. We really don't have any standards associated with it. So if we're really going to do the job of pre-assessment, if you will, for our for employability, we've got to create some kind of a process in place to do some testing. I do that at the college level, and I'll let John talk to you about that. But that's I think the one of the issues with the tests, with the standards. I did work, by the way, as an industry representative on the science standards for the state a few years ago when they were put together. And our main concern was, again, applications. Concepts are fine, but can they apply them? That's what we're looking for in industry.
Tom?
Okay. Tom Hamill. My conception of a meaningful diploma would be one that is valued by all the stakeholders and all the folks that will view or ask to view that diploma, and if the exit exam being a piece of that would be the content valued by all the stakeholders and the application piece and the employability skills be a part of that. Also a document, and I do have a black and white copy here, there we go. A document that maybe would be a pictorial representation as well as a narrative representation of what does this mean, in that you could hand this to a prospective employer to say, here's the levels that I've accomplished in my standard areas, and here's exactly what I am capable of doing because I've graduated at these levels.
A version of a portfolio.
Pardon me?
A version of a portfolio.
Yes. And hopefully they would have something even more substantial, an individual portfolio as well. So that's my take on a meaningful diploma.
I just John Hart. I don't have a lot to add. I have two daughters. One just got a diploma. The other one took the high school exit exam last year, and hopefully will get a diploma in the year 2002. And I'm not sure there's going to be a great deal of difference in those two diplomas. I think that for a diploma to really be meaningful, it should represent